भद्रं कर्णे पश्यन्ते देवाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैः स्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्ष्यो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्धधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः. Number six. Repeat after me. Everybody there? That's six. Esha Sarveshwaraha. Esha Sarveshwaraha. Esha Sarvajnaha, Esha Sarvajnaha, Esha Antaramya, I'm going to do it like this, Esha Antaryami, Esha Antaryami, Esha Yonihi, Esha Yonihi, Sarvasya,
Sarvasya,
Prabhavapyayau, Prabhavapyayau, Ibhutanam, Ibhutanam, Prakasandi. Eshaha, Sarva Ishwaraha. It's a compound, Sarveshwaraha. Eshaha, Sarveshwaraha. Eshaha, Sarvagnyaha. Eshaha, Antaryami. Eshaha, Yonihi. Sarvasya Prabhava Apyayau Hibhutanam. In the previous verse, we were talking about Sushupti, the deep sleep state, you know, saying where. The one who, in the previous verse, talking about, we went through the waking state, and we did the dream state, right? And now it's the deep sleep state, where it says, where the one who is asleep, this is verse 5, doesn't desire anything, right? The one who is sleeping, that person, that one, doesn't desire anything in that place, nor do they see any dream. Then no waking state, no dream state. In a sense, the waking and the dream are the same. Okay? No waking state, no dream state. Neither of these are experienced, nor is there any type of desire for anything in the deep sleep state. That's what we call deep sleep, the sushuptasthana, that place of deep sleep where eki bhutaha, where everything has become one. The waking state and the dream state have collapsed in just into one prajnanagana, one mass of consciousness. What they mean there when they say a mass of consciousness is that here in the waking state, consciousness is diversified. Knowledge is diversified. In the deep sleep in the dream state, knowledge is diversified. But in the dream state, knowledge is diversified. In the deep sleep state, there is no diversification at all. There is just conscious being without conscious being of anything. Right? There's no manifestation there. That's what he calls prajnanagana. And in that state is what we call anandamaya. It is just wholeness. It is fullness. And in fact, the person in the deep sleep is called an anandabhuk. Anandabhuk means an enjoyer of ananda. Anandamaya means it's full of ananda. Anandabhuk means ananda or fullness is being enjoyed in that state. When we say that, when it's being enjoyed in that state, that means that the antakarana, the mind itself, has a vritti. It's a thought modification in which there is no differentiation. It's all one big mass of consciousness, no differentiation at all, no subject-object differentiation. And so the only thing that is filling that vritti without all of these differentiations and emotions and all of the things that come in the waking state and the deep state, the only thing that is filling that deep sleep state where the world is unmanifest and the mind is in a causal condition, the only thing that is filling it is the ananda, or the wholeness, the fullness, which is the truth of all of it. In other words, the idea is this. In this world, what we call the waking state, the ananda of my being, that wholeness of my being, what I kind of asked you to bring with you into the room, just the wholeness of my being, is absolutely pervasive and present to the waking state experience. But the waking state experience, because there's so much diversity in it, there's all raga dvesha, it's very complicated. My being is, in a sense, illumining in the self of very diverse experiences that take place within the waking state. There's the diverse experience of myself as a jiva, as a waker, with all of my moods and emotions, and there's the diversity of what's going on in the waking state itself, which can be pleasurable sukha experiences and dukkha experiences. So all of this diversity of experience is taking place and has for its being me, that whose nature is wholeness or fullness or the beloved or whatever ananda, whatever we want to talk. But that ananda is pervasive to that state as it is to the waking state, which is a causal experience where the mind is in its causal condition. But in the waking state and in the dream state, for that matter, where there's this all this diversity, there is competition. There are other states of experience which are competing with my own being. So I would have to be able to have the viveka, which is very possible, and which you will have as this discrimination develops, as it's developing for you. You will have the viveka of my fullness, the wholeness of myself is untouched, and pervasive to the sorrow and the agitation and whatever other diverse experiences may be going on. But then I can say, this is dukkha. This dukkha, this sorrow, is taking place in ananda. But the vritti that's being experienced is dukkha. The vritti, the content of the vritti that is being experienced is dukkha, or sukha, or agitation, or anger, or compassion, or just an intellectual vritti. It is whatever it is. But that vritti is, the vritti is what is being experienced, and those experiences, those type of vrittis, those experiences, emotional vrittis also, they all come and go, right, in me. I don't come and go. So the ananda of myself is not changing at all. So that is going to be there and needs to be differentiated from all of the vrittis and all of the emotional content of the vrittis. To the extent of when I'm in the waking state, I have, say, just my own nature, right, which is never changing, and I have a dukkha vritti, means a sorrowful thought, then both should be present to me. The one nature of myself is not at all ever covered by whatever the thought is. Similarly, if I have a sukha vritti, a very joyful vritti, that also is present to myself, which is exactly the same as when I have the dukkha vritti. That's the viveka that we need to have. So now he says, in the deep sleep state, these types of vrittis, diverse vrittis of the waking state and the dream state are not there. The whole mind has gone into just unmanifest condition. There's no duality happening at all. The whole thing is resolved. There's no subject-object relationship, nor is there any diversity in the vritti. So then, what does that vritti have to offer you? The deep, what does the vritti have to offer you, this deep sleep vritti? Well, In the deep sleep vritti, and Shankara talks about this in his commentary, in this deep sleep vritti, in the deep sleep condition where the mind is in the unresolved, in the causal condition, then there is at that time no stress in the mind. It is a stress-free mind. And so now, your being is illuminating a mind that has no problems. It's a total ignorance. Swamiji will joke and say, total ignorance is bliss. The mind has no problems. It has no stress. And so there is nothing in that mind, you know, which is competing with my own presence, which is beloved. And so this non-stressful, stressful mind, resolved mind, which is illumined, is called Ananda. I become the Ananda book. It has the experience of Ananda because the mind is relieved of all type of stress and diversity, and I simply abide illumining that. So there's no competition at all. It says, it is Ananda Maya. It is just filled with Ananda as the wholeness, as is every vritti. Every vritti, every experience is filled with that Ananda. But in the waking and dream states, waking and dream, the Ananda, which is filling it, is filling other types of moods and emotions. See what I mean? When those are all resolved, when the Ananda, the wholeness of myself, is just illumining a vritti which is offering, a resolved vritti, causal condition that offers no competition. And so this is this pada, this is the third pada. It's called prajñaha. Prajñaha means, from the standpoint of the jiva now, it's just pure consciousness without any experience of diversity. And again, you have to remember that we go into looking at really what is the material of this creation as mitya, as maya. It has it never has any being or substance away from consciousness. Right, like the clay pot. The pot has no being away from clay. Snake has no being away from rope. What is actually there is consciousness. But maya, this maya which has no separation, just like the pot has no separation from the clay, this universe of experience on the subjective, the body, mind, sense organs, waker, aware of the waking world, this whole experience has no substance apart from consciousness. So when all of this is in unmanifest condition, then the consciousness that is there when your eyes are open is the consciousness that is there when your eyes are closed. And it's not any different. The consciousness that is here, you close your eyes or you resolve your mind, the exact same consciousness is here. It doesn't come and go. To understand that experience is when you have a dream, you know, and the dream is something very real, it's happening, you're totally engaged in it, and then it's time to wake up, you wake up from the dream. And then what you realize is that the one that was in really the form of the dream, nothing has happened to it. It's a real experience to actually, as a sadhana, to notice. Like if you haven't noticed this, to just do an auto suggestion. You know, when I wake up from a dream, notice what has happened to me. Has anything been lost when the entire dream universe has disappeared on me? All of the beings have disappeared. The universe has disappeared. All of the activity, all of the desires, everything has disappeared like that. Has anything happened? It's not even saying, don't even just, it's not, has it, it's not just has anything happened to me. It's more than that. Has anything happened? It's not just has anything happened to me. Has anything happened? And what you have to say is, nothing has happened. Here this whole world was going on, but nothing has happened. That's because what in the relationship between satyam mitya is that. There is nothing there but the satyam, whatever is satyam. And so if something happens to the mitya, nothing really happens. If something happens to the pot, nothing has happened to the clay. The clay remains exactly the same. But the nama rupa is there. If you have to juxtapose clay pot to really work with this clay pot and rope snake, you know. If something happens to what is mitya, nothing happens to the satyam, and mitya has no independent being of its own. So one way to experience that this vividly is when you wake up from a dream. Another way that is not so kind of shocking, because you're used to it, it happens all of the time, moment to moment to moment, is to notice that as thoughts come and go, you know, as perceptions come and go, so much is happening and nothing is happening. Both are there, equally at the same time. The thoughts, the moods, the feelings are all coming and going. But as they're coming and going, what is actually here, nothing happens to. The being itself is stable, and that being is you. You can never get away from it. But this is the viveka that has to take place. Anything, viveka means the, you know, the discrimination. So anything that comes and goes, and comes and goes, and comes and goes, anything subject to change, that becomes like a laboratory. Your life is a laboratory for recognizing, you know, that which is never coming and going. That coming and going takes place in what is not coming and going. And what is not coming and going, you can't do anything about. That's moksha. When you realize that what is not coming to go and going is your very being, and that being is the beloved, it is Ananda, then you watch all of this maya taking place without touching you, and the more you recognize that, the more to, in gestalt, the more to the forefront your own presence comes. And so here, now, in the, having gone into the deep sleep state, where everything is resolved, there's something that he has to point out here. In the waking state, what's available to you and the dream state is subject-object. Waker, the waker and the waking world. Here, I am the waker experiencing the waking world, subject-object. Right? In the dream state, you know, I am the dreamer, the dream character experiencing the dream world. Subject-object are there in those two, right? And so in the waking state and in the dream state, what they talked about was they gave two names. You know, there in the waking state there is, you know, Vishwa, the waker, and Vaishvanara, the Ishwara, you know, Virat. The Vishwa, the individual, name for the individual, and Virat, or Vaishvanara, or both. Virat for Ishwara. So I... still, in the waking state, I, the waker, am part of the waking world. Right? I exist in the waking world. So I, as a jiva, here I am, the jiva, really not separate from Ishwara in the waking world. You see that? Because I exist like a wave in the ocean, part and parcel of Ishwara. I'm a part of Ishwara, of Virat. It's the same in the dream state. I exist, you know, as a dreamer, they call Taijasa. In the waking world, in the dream world that we call Hiranyagarbha, that's Ishwara. So I come into relationship. I'm part of it, but I'm also related to it from within it. See that? So there's this dreamer and dream world. In the deep sleep, there is no distinction between waker and waking world. Dreamer and dream world. There's no sleeper and sleep world for the sleeper to say, I am part of the sleep world. Right? Because in the sleep world, in the deep sleep state, there's no subject-object differentiation for me to even make a comment on my relationship to Ishwara. The whole thing is in unmanifest condition. So this prajnaha means For the jiva, prajnaha is the one who is just consciousness, but is also unaware of it. There's nothing there but consciousness. Because all of the nama rupas, all of the names and forms have come into unmanifest condition. Right? And so there's nothing there except just consciousness, because everything else is in the maya is in an unmanifest condition. Leaving only consciousness. There's no differentiation between name and form. And so the only difference between prajna and what we would call now Ishwara, instead of Hiranyagarbha in Virat, the only difference between prajna And Ishvara is one of Ajnanam. And it goes like this. This Maya, I'm making a little bit of a jump here, but we're just going to do it and then I'll look on it. What the Vedanta, and we'll see as we get more into this, the whole creation is looking, is something that comes into consciousness, comes into manifestation, is sustained and resolves. Like I could say your dream comes into manifestation, is sustained, and it resolves. Another way to language this is that knowledge comes into manifestation, is sustained, and it resolves. Now to understand that would be to say, like I said last week, I'm asking you now to think of a butterfly. Okay? Now when you think of it, the knowledge that was there comes into manifestation in the form of a vritti now. And as long as you're thinking of butterfly, it is there and then it resolves. Okay? And so now, what that means is that knowledge itself has an unmanifest condition. Okay? So, the difference between, and so this would be, oh, let me go on. The difference between Ishvara and Prajna, you know, which is a deep sleep, the Maya, when it's Maya, just when it's in unmanifest condition, is simply that for Ishvara, for the total Maya, when it comes into manifestation, what is happening is that the infinite knowledge that is in an unmanifest state becomes manifest. Okay. Now, a way that you can look at it for yourself as a little Ishvara for yourself, you are the little Ishvara, if whatever knowledge that you have, the vast majority of it right now is in unmanifest condition. You see that? The vast majority, you have a huge amount of knowledge, most of it is just simply abiding there, waiting to come into manifestation as you need it. But it is abiding there, right? And so you are the kind of the Ishvara, the subjective little Ishvara, of all of that knowledge that is abiding there in you, because you can draw upon it at any time. But the knowledge that you have abiding there in you in unmanifest condition is limited. You wouldn't say that I have limitless knowledge. Now say even for you, if you are a jnani, that you have self-knowledge, you have jnana-nishtha, you have clarity of knowledge, then abiding in that unmanifest condition is whatever knowledge you have of the world, and also the atma-jnana that you have. You have knowledge of the self. Knowledge you have of the self is spurn aside, exactly the same knowledge that Ishvara has, the nature of the self. Because the self, your being, is just one non-dual consciousness. You know, there's not any... The self that you recognize, for somebody who's recognized their self, is Ishvara's self. So it's not like Ishvara has a big self and you have a little self. So the self that you know is the self that Ishvara knows. So you have self-knowledge. And so the self-knowledge that you have, we call sarvajnaha. Ishvara has sarvajnaha, all knowledge, in reference to the Atma, the nature of reality. Ishvara, the Lord, is sarvajnaha. And you, the jiva, who has self-knowledge, you also are sarvajnaha. Sarvajnaha is the same, because there's not two versions of the atma. And the atma is non-dual, it's not big or small. It just is. It is exactly what it is. You know it, Ishvara knows it, anybody who knows it, exactly, identically the same. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, so now, all of mm-hmm. us as jivas who have knowledge have that sarvajnitvam. But what we don't have, because we're limited in terms of our experience of the world, we don't have all knowledge in terms of the manifest creation. We have limited, it's called alpajnaha, we have limited knowledge. Where Ishvara has what we call sarvavit. Sarvavit versus sarvajnaha. Sarvavit means particular knowledge. It's like you have particular knowledge of whatever limited knowledge bank you have. All of that can come into manifestation. For Ishwara, there is no limitation there. So the manifestation of the creation is the manifestation of limitless knowledge, which includes self-knowledge. So you have limitless knowledge, inclusive of self-knowledge. And so that's the nature. When we talk about Ishwara as the Lord, we're talking about the one who is the Brahman, which is who you are, is Brahman, but with the total Maya Upadhi, the total Maya, which when it manifests is manifest knowledge, means that the whole creation is known. And also there's no ajnanam, there's no ignorance, because there's no limitation. Self-knowledge is also there. So that is the nature of Ishwar. That's why we say he's a Mayavi. Ishwar is the Mayavi, the one who controls Maya. Right? We say Ishwar is a Mayavi, he controls Maya. It's not like there's a little man up there controlling Maya. It's that there's no ajnanam for Ishwar to become subject to Maya. Whereas the jiva, because for the jiva, ajnanam is there. Right? The ajnanam is there, and so because of for a jiva, the self, unless the self-knowledge is there, I'll talk about that in a minute. For the jiva, the maya itself becomes a covering. Okay? For Ishwara, the maya doesn't become a covering. That's why even though for the jiva and for Ishwara, the whole creation can be prajna, it can be an unmanifest condition, but from the standpoint of Ishwara, it's going to be different. Because there's no limitation in the knowledge. There's no limitation. And so the creation comes into manifestation, it comes into manifestation, and then it resolves into that maya, that prajna condition where there's no differentiation at all. Okay? But when the whole upadhi comes in, the whole creation comes into manifestation, then the one who's identified with the whole has no ajnanam. But the ones who are identified from the standpoint of individual upadis have limitation. But that's going to be the difference. I know this is maybe, I need to do it better than I'm doing it.
That's good.
But when it comes into the unmanifest condition of the deep sleep is exactly the same because there's no diversity at all. Right? So for you, when you're in the unmanifest condition, that causal state for you acts as a covering, but for Ishwara, it's only the Maya Upadhi. So it's a little tricky, and it's a little tricky to understand, but you have to think of it like this. When you are in the deep sleep, your Antakarana is in unmanifest condition. Right? And there's no way to differentiate unmanifest condition from unmanifest condition, because we're talking about the same Maya. And so there's no way to differentiate you from Ishwara. The differentiation comes about when the mind is manifest. Right? Because when your mind is manifest, then that mind is limited. It's still within Ishwara, absolutely within Ishwara. But when it comes into a manifest, then it has this what we call avarna, which is covering the self. The difference between... So that's the nature for an ajnani. The difference between an ajnani is it's a little different. For a jnani, there's that ishwartvam is there in terms of sarvajnaha, because there's no possibility of the nature of yourself being covered by the maya. In other words, the identity of your being with this body isn't there anymore. This body is what it is and it does what it does. Your mind is what it is, and it does what it does. But the viveka is there between your nature, your being, and what your mind is doing, what your body is doing. That's not, that mistake doesn't take place anymore. Once that's over, it's over. Even if your mind is acting up in a way you don't want it to, you know, say your mind has these complexes and worries and all these things, and it's just acting like it's just an ajnani. You could say, you know, come back, come home. What are you doing? you know, whenever, ever, all the different ways you can talk to yourself. All of that can be happening, but there's no identification of that with the stability of your own presence. You're still there. Right? That Atma, it remains untouched. That's exactly for the same for Ishvara. The same Atma remains untouched. That's why the Sarvajnatvam is the same exactly for you and for Ishvara. It's the Sarvavit. The Sarvavit, the particular knowledge is not there. So here, what he does when he goes into, we did already did the deep sleep state, but now he has more to say about this state. He said, this is Sarveshwaraha. This state, you know, with this Maya, this sort of consciousness, this is the Lord of all. And this is Sarvajnaha. The Lord of all means Ishvara, you know. It's this state with this, it's the Atma, as we'll see, the Atma, which is the self of this state. The Atma with this state, this causal condition, is Ishvara, right? Because it is Atma, it is the self with this causal condition that manifests as the whole creation. And it is this self which is the Sarvajnaha also. Sarvajnaha means the one who knows the self. So the one who is the Lord of all, the one who knows the self, this one also is what we call the Antaryami. The Antaryami is this Maya in unmanifest condition, or this Maya that projects as the creation. It is Antaryami. When we say Antaryami, it's one way of saying it is the laws which make a thing what it is, allows one thing to be what it is. Like what allows the solar system, for instance, to be that? What are the laws that inform, you know, the solar system? What are the laws that allow for there to be wind? What are the laws that allow for the oceans? What are the laws that allow for any given animal to be that animal? See what I mean? So he says also, the laws that allow for the very prarabdha karma that allows you in this particular body to have taken this form and live this life. You can understand, like, sometimes you'll say, well, what allows an oak tree to be an oak tree? It starts as a seed and it grows up and lives its oak tree life and then eventually, you know, over hundreds of years, it dies. What allows your life to take birth and then go through the whole series of karmas that it goes through until that prarabdha is over? That, he says, that antaryami, it's those laws that abide in Ishvara, in that unmanifest condition, have to be abiding there inside, ruling, being the order that allows for your life to go from birth to death. So that's the antaryami. It's antar means inside. It's like the governing laws inside that allow something to be what it is and to go through what it has to go through. It says this Maya, you know, which is knowledge, infinite knowledge in unmanifest condition that comes into manifestation. Now there's something also even in those words that are important. When you say it's in that knowledge itself that manifests as this creation, is when the creation is resolved, is in unmanifest condition. What this means is that knowledge is not created. Knowledge is not created. It doesn't require, for Ishvara, Ishvara doesn't have to gain knowledge through a vritti. As a jiva, we go on accruing and collecting knowledge through vrittis, through our means of knowledge. But the whole creation in unmanifest condition, right, is unmanifest knowledge. That knowledge doesn't have to be created. It's already infinite. And so from Ishvara's standpoint, there's not a creation of knowledge, there's a manifestation of knowledge. You go on accruing knowledge, right, from the standpoint of a limited mind. So he says, this is the Antaryami, which is the Yonihi, the cause, Sarvasya, of everything. The yoni means the womb. The Ishvara, this Pragnaha, is which we call Ishvara, is the womb of all of everything that is. Everything that is in manifest condition is there in unmanifest condition in Ishvara. And then he says, it is the Prabhava and Apiya of all beings. Prabhava means the birth. Is that from which is born all beings? And Apiya, that into Apiya means into which all things resolve. So it is the source from which everything comes, and it is also the source into which everything resolves. This is also important in Swamiji, and his commentary on this brings out this point that you can be the creator of something. Because of you, this thing has been created. Like, for instance, the pot maker. Because of the pot maker is the creator of the pot. Right? And so there can be a difference between the pot maker and the pot. You're the creator of the pot. Right? But you can't be the one into whom the pot resolves. Right? And so if something is both that what we call the nimittakarana, the creator, the source from which the creation comes, and then also the upad, in order for it to be, so you can be the nimittakarana, the one who creates, but to be the one into whom it resolves, right, then you have to be also the upadanakarana, the material cause. And that's not true in the world. You know, usually, we use the example actually of a dancer. So a dancer is the nimittakarana and the upadanakarana, because the body is what's being used for the dance. So that's kind of a nice example. But here, if you think of the whole creation, Ishvara is the nimittakarana, the one who is the source, the one from whom the whole creation comes, but also the upadanakarana, because is the one into whom the entire creation resolves. Right? And so that's why this prajnaha, which you experience in deep sleep, is actually the very maya, you know, from which the creation comes and into which it resolves. Right? And then that maya has for its being the Atma. So now what's happened is we've got the waking state, dream state, and deep sleep states, and the waking and dream coming really out of the deep sleep state, right? But all of these three states enjoy a fourth state. It's called Turiya, which is really not a fourth state. The Turiya is the self, is the one that is present, the self that is present as the self of all three of those states. So we look at these waking, dream, deep sleep, only to recognize the one, you know, that is the self of all three. Yeah. So you look at these three in relationship to each other, only to realize that, you know, all of them have only one self. And so Swamiji also comments on this in his commentary. All of these three states we're actually experiencing, even in the waking state. The waking state, when you're using your sense organs, that's the Vishwa. You know, it's the first pada. In the dream state, when you're not, it's just simply anytime you're not using your sense organs. Those are just mental states that are not being generated by your sense organs. Dream is a good example of it. And then the third state, you know, the third pada, which is deep sleep, but it's also anytime your mind is resolved. It's not perceiving the world. It itself is not chattering. The mind is not chattering. It's just resolved either in deep sleep or just resolved into a meditative state. Right? So we're coming and going through all of these states all of the time. Right? But the constant, in the end you're going to say all of these states are happening, you know, throughout, not just in their own state, but they're, you know, coming throughout in the waking state, but they're all taking place, you know, in you, who are the self of all three states. And so that's what has to be developed. But before we develop that, which will be the next, the fourth pada, the Turiya, which is the Atma. Gaudapada comes in and does several verses, commenting even more on these Upanishad verses that we've just done. So next week we'll be doing the Kadika. I think it's that six verses or so.
Oh, good.
And it's very nice. The verses are very clean and simple, and he's just going through in with more elaboration what the Upanishad verses have done. It's a commentary in verse form on the Upanishad verses. So we'll do it next week. I'll stop here. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
Daydream or use of imagination or
that would
hypnosis
be,
all be under the second part?
It would be. It is, yeah. In fact, even memory, anytime that you're not using your sense organs for the vritti, then that's the second pada. Kajasa.
Is that the same with projections too? Then would you put that there?
I didn't think about that, actually. It's a little bit of a combination.
So seeing Tajasa's dream is not fully accurate?
Meaning
it's not seen in contrast to waking? If I interpret Tajasa's dream, it's in contrast to waking, and the two are never happening at the same time.
Right.
What I hear you saying is that within the waking state, there's Tajasa that is... if it's not sensory. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. But when we break it out, we start just talking about the waking state and then versus the dream state, which these are the extreme states. The waking state is right now. I'm not thinking about Tajasa or Prajna in this state initially. We're just talking, I'm experiencing you through my sense organs and this is the waking state. But then you can say, well, actually, in the waking state itself, there's times when I'm just Tajasa, and times when I'm just Prajna, right? But we start out just making these very demarcated differences, waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. But when we analyze it more, then we see that actually, you know, in the waking state, we're coming out in and out of these three states, which is important because otherwise you're just demarcating. It's a false demarcation in a way. These are the major three states of experience, but you can't say that you're not having these, that you're not living in the Tajasa realm at times in the waking state. Mm-hmm. Right? Or when the mind is resolved, you're in the Prajna realm. But then when you look at waking, dream, and deep sleep, these are pure differentiations. They're pure differentiations anyway, actually, but they're coming quickly within the waking state.
So the
It shouldn't actually make a conflict for you.
Well, yeah, it's the term waking state. I mean, if we use waking, then that would exclude its the terminology.
No,
so the terms of
well, actually, we say waking, dream, and deep sleep,
right? But the Sanskrit's not necessarily implying
well,
that.
Well, no, it defines it. Then what do we mean by waking state? Then it says bahishpragnaha. Bahishpragnaha, and then it goes on. Bahishpragnaha means external consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sense organs is the defining.
That's right. And if you go to the first verse that's talking about the waking state, then it actually defines what they mean by the waking state and what they mean by the dream state. Sometimes, you know, we say these three avastas. We have words for it also. The jagritasthana is the waking state. You know, the swapnasthana is the dream state. Shushuptasthana is the deep sleep state. So we have these waking, dream, deep sleep. And then we have the name for the teaching prakriya is the avasta thraya sakshi, the one who is the witness of this group of three states. The three avastas, waking, dream, deep sleep. But then when we analyze the states, this what we call that swapna avasta is actually the tajasas happening many times throughout the day. See what I mean?
So the three states are states that the mind experiences.
That's right.
And then the fourth is not a state.
We call it as a state and then resolve that differentiation, as though, see, here's the waking state, here's the dream state, here's the deep sleep state, and here's the, you know, the Atma state, the Turiya, the fourth. Turiya means fourth. So you've got the first pada, second pada, third pada, fourth, and the fourth. And then is the fourth a fourth? Like when the Turiya is there, which is just pure consciousness, then none of these, the Turiya isn't there throughout? See what I mean? Is Turiya here in the waking state? Because the deep sleep state, the dream state is not here when the waking state is here. Even within the waking state, if I'm in the Turiya, I mean, if I'm in the dream state, imagining or whatever, at that time I'm not in the waking state. See that? It doesn't have to do, so the waking, when the waking state is here, then that's not the dream state. When the deep sleep state is here, that's not the waking state or the dream state. So do we say the same for the Atma? The Turiya, the fourth state.
That's always there, no matter what.
It's always there.
Well, that confuses me. So we can say...
You have to wait till we get there, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well...
But go ahead.
The dream state comes into manifestation and it's sustained and it's resolved.
Yeah.
And same with the waking state.
Right.
Why then are you saying that, or why is it said that the Atma doesn't
because
manifest and resolve, especially when you look at the dreams or the deep sleep state? Because it doesn't seem that there's any... that's something that needs to be... that's Shraddha only. There's never a way to verify that. How can we possibly verify that consciousness or you know, the self continues during deep sleep?
How could it not continue?
Well, it could come into manifestation, be destroyed, or sustain, and then resolve.
Yeah,
how do we know that it doesn't in the deep sleep state? Because we don't know anything. The mind isn't there. It's asleep.
When you have the waking dream and deep sleep, now, let's see if I can pull this together right now. The waking and the dream state, in the waking and the dream state, you have a body, mind, sense organs that are awake and functioning. And therefore, there is knowership and the experience of time, space, duality in these two states, right? In the deep sleep state, there is no experience of time, right, or space, or duality, or subject-object, or knowership. There's no I. There's nobody in deep sleep saying, oh, I know I'm deep sleeping, or, oh, look, nothing's happening. The knower and the known are both resolved. Right? Now, the thing is, in the waking state, the knower and the known are there, but they're resolved in the dream state, and you have a different knower known. You've taken on a different subtle body, you know, that matches the dream state, but still the knower known is there, subject-object. Deep sleep, there's no subject-object. But Atma, the self, is not considered to be a knower. Consciousness is not a knower. A knower of something. To be a knower of something, there has to be subject-object relationship, duality, right? And so now say if the body resolves, well, it doesn't actually resolve, but your experience of the body resolves, the sense organs and their experiences resolve in deep sleep. The mind also resolves in deep sleep. All of these are the instruments that require that are required for knowership or enjoyership. So if you get rid of all, and also get rid of all of those things, then there's no experience of time, you know?
I guess another way to say my question is, So if there's no knowership, then we can't know whether there's an Atma in deep sleep, because there's no way to know it, because there's no knowership. We don't really know. We're just inferring it. It's purely inferential knowledge.
Not exactly like that. When we were... I mean... Okay, I'll get into it a little bit. Especially that guy. That's okay.
You can punt the question, too, if you...
I will punt after a while. Let's see how much energy I've got. It takes us into certain dimensions. But let me just go there and we'll swim around in it, see what we can do. When you wake up from deep sleep state, right, then you describe that state. Like you'll describe, and there's no one talking in the deep sleep. It's an unmanifest condition, right? But when you awake from it, then you will describe it. Oh, I slept well. I didn't know anything at that time. Right? It was a good sleep. You know? That's what we, in Sanskrit, they'll say, you know, like, I slept very well. I didn't know anything. Didn't know anything at that time. So you're actually describing the vritti. You're describing the condition, the experience that you had. You have to be awake from it to have a descriptor. You know, but you're describing the condition. The same thing, really. When you're in the waking state, you're describing that condition. When you talk about your dream, you're describing that condition. When you're talking about the deep sleep state, you're describing that condition. Right. So here we have three.
Well, I don't think you are. I think you're describing how you feel in the moment, that you wake up feeling good, and you're inferring that you must have slept well. You can't really remember or know what was going on when you were sleeping. You're just inferring that. At least, that's what it seems like to me.
We do say that there is a memory of it. That you actually have a memory of the experience because you're the one who had the experience. For there to be an inference, you know, that this gets a little complex, but it's a big discussion. Not a big discussion, but it is a discussion. When you have an inference, then you are experiencing something, right, so that you can infer something else. You're not actually experiencing the something else. Like, for instance, if I say, oh, there's a fire on the hill. But I don't see the fire, I see smoke. And there's an invariable relationship between smoke and fire so that I can infer the fire. If I'm certain that's smoke, then I know that there's fire, right? Here there's no room for any inference. There's only an experience which you're recalling. You know, it's not that you're not saying, oh, I feel relaxed now, so I must have slept well. I don't think that's what we're saying. When we say, oh, when I ask you, what's deep sleep like? Then you're saying, well, let me see, what is it like? Well, I don't know anything at that time. You know, I enjoy being in deep sleep. I like to be in deep sleep. You know, I slept very well. You know? So I'm talking about a condition that I have to have a, not an inference of, because I'm actually describing the condition. In other words, what you're saying is that, okay, now I have this, now I'm awake. You know, and I look at the clock, and I see that 8 hours have gone by, you know, and so I must have slept, right?
Or my body feels a certain way.
Or my body feels a certain way, but now I'm awake to that feeling. There's a time when I'm not awake to that feeling. And you can describe that. And you can say, in a deep sleep, I don't know anything.
But there's a contradiction in what you're saying. Because it's the jiva making that description. It's the jiva in the waking state saying, I slept well.
Yeah.
But
the jiva also says, I dreamt. The jiva also says, I'm awake.
Yeah. Dream and waking, yeah.
Yeah.
But deep sleep, the jiva is not there, right? The jiva has resolved. There's no knowing. There's no time, there's no space, there's nothing going on.
But there's also, this is another tricky thing here. There's also in the deep sleep no time. Right? If you say there's time, then there's waking. There's some form of liminal perception of duality, because you're marking time. But when the mind is in unmanifest condition, there's no marking of time. And so when that's the case, there is no experience of anything between the two states.
I'm not sure what that means. There's no experience of anything between the two states.
Well, for you to say that I was not here, that I was not here in that deep sleep state, right? There's no, you don't have any data there to say that, because there wasn't any gap in time.
Well, I'm saying that's what you were saying, that there's no knowership, there's no...
There, yeah, but for you, say, if you're saying, I wasn't there, there's no experience, there's no time, right?
Right, there's no way to know one way or the other.
Not from the standpoint of the mind. You know, like the mind is going to just say, it's going to say, what the mind will say is, in deep sleep I don't know anything. There's no way I can know. That's what it says. Right? So it's talking about its experience.
Yeah, isn't that kind of an experience? You do have, somebody has the experience of deep sleep, right?
It's what we call, well, that's another logic. It's called pratyabhijna, but let's just look at this one for a minute. When everything is resolved in deep sleep, means there's no experience of duality, no subject-object relationship, no time, no space. Right? And so, really, there is no... All you can do is say, is describe that. Or I'm just describing it, and you're not in your head. Right, you're nodding your head about that experience.
Well, I'm nodding my head that I'm getting what you're saying.
Okay, but you're not nodding your head about the truth of that experience.
I don't experience time, space, and all those things, but I'm not sure that they're not there because I don't experience. I don't know.
That's fine.
Yeah.
We're not making a comment on whether they're there or not.
Okay.
But they're not at all there in your experience. That's
right.
The important thing.
Yeah, I agree.
No. Okay, so you've got the waking state experience, the dream state experience, and the deep sleep state experience. These are three experiences that I go throughout the day, right? So I can divide the 24 hours into these three. You know, if I do get to deep sleep, some of us don't get that. If you get a deep sleep, you can say, yeah. And we can all talk about these three states of experience, right? Really, we're actually only talking about the dream state and the deep sleep from the standpoint of the waking state, right?
But it's not.
Yes.
Well, when you're in the dream state, you're probably not talking about the waking state. Yeah. So it's only really from the waking state that we're analyzing our experience. And we're dividing our experience into these three states. And so here, from the standpoint of the waker... Isn't that true?
Yeah, I'm just getting hung up on the fact that, in effect, I've just learned that they're not, in effect, waking, deep sleep, and dream. They're more external, internal, and unmanifest. And so I sort of almost prefer to talk about them in those terms. But
the waking, dream, and deep sleep are... That's a really kind of concrete and useful differentiation. But when analyzing it further, we can see that we actually have these three states throughout the day.
Yeah.
Okay, but so anyway, look at it like this. Here we are in the waking state. We are now analyzing our experience. Now, our experience is, we're not analyzing whether something is there, even though we're not experiencing it. We're just looking at our experience. So I have the waking state experience, I have the dream state experience, and I have the deep sleep state experience. Now, I'm talking about this from the standpoint of the waker, right? And so now I'm going to take another little piece of logic.
But see, the last thing, saying I have a deep sleep experience.
Right.
What is that? It's a lack of experience.
And
then there's an inference that there's something going on. At least that's how, that's the best I can make sense out of what you're saying.
No, I don't think so, because there's something that we call pratibhijna. What that means is, okay, like if I take two moments, two separate moments, moment one and moment two, right? If I have a pratibhijna, it's a memory of my presence in moment one from moment two. In other words, I can say, the one who is here is the one who is there. That's where I have a sense of continuity, right? And so now look at this. I have the big moments, the waking moment, the dream moment, and the deep sleep moment. From the waking state, I, the one who is in this waking state, I, the one who am in, let's go like this, I, the one who am here, present to this waking state, right, is the one who was present to the dream. Or I could say, I, the waker in the waking state, right, even though that waking state is negated, I am the one, the same one who is the waker in the waking state, is the dreamer in the dream state. Right? So I can say, I was in the waking state and I was in the dream state. Same self. Now the thing is that if I just take these two states, the waking world is negated by the dream world. The waking world isn't here in the dream experience. Right? It's a different world. It's a dream world, subtle world. The waking body is not here being experienced in the dream body. Right? You see that? Just in terms of experience.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I would say, using this Anvayavgyatireka logic, just with these two things, goes like this. The Anvayavgyatireka. When this is, that is. When this is not, that is not. Okay. If that's the case, the positive, this is, that is, if that's so, then I could say there might be a real relationship between those two things. When this is, that is. But then if I go, I can solidify that real relationship by saying, and when this is not, that is not. Then these two are totally dependent on each other. But what if I say, when this is, that is, and when this is not, that still is. Then when that's the situation, there's no dependence, right? So now I say, when the waking state is, I am. But when the dream state is, I also am. But the dream state negates the waking state. They're not happening at the same time. So in this condition, in this situation, I am. And in that situation, I also am. And since these two situations negate each other, right, then I know that my being is independent of those two sets of experience. Now, in the deep sleep state, even though in the deep sleep state, in that state the mind is resolved and it's not making a commentary, nevertheless, from the waking state, I can say, and I am the one who slept. If I'm not, there's another level of logic here. The dream state is negated by the waking state, is negated by the deep sleep state, in that these are three different sets of experience which the same one self enjoys, because I can own all three states of experience. What that means then is that my being is independent of these three conditions. Just from the waking state, if I said, I am the one who had this experience, I am the one who had this experience, and I am the one who had this experience, therefore, I am free and independent of all three experiences.
How can you say that the waker can own the deep sleep state? I can see...
You can describe it. What's the difference, really, between owning the dream state and owning the deep sleep state? They're just two different states of experience. One has a manifestation of duality, the other doesn't. But both of them are different than your waking state.
Well, the difference is that the dream state, you can actually have a memory of that. You can remember your dreams.
But we say that you are also having a memory of the, what they call an eti sukshma vritti. It's a very subtle vritti, because the mind is not active. It's in its causal condition.
But there's still a memory there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, now look at, if something disappears and goes into non-existence, it can't come back. And so the same waking experience, the waking memories, all come back. You see, from that causal condition, if it's just going into non-existence, there's nothing that can come back.
Well, the dreams come back, but they come back differently. You know, I mean, the dream state comes back, even though there's,
if I may,
rarely to have the same dream.
Comment on that. What I hear what you're saying is it's the jiva that remembers the dream,
yes.
Right? And so what I hear you saying is, because we don't remember dream sleep, how can I infer the existence of Atma? And I think what I'm hooking into...
Deep sleep, sorry, yes.
But Atma is that consciousness with no object. And the memory of dream sleep is consciousness with an object, and it's the jiva awareness. So I think in a way you're trying to say, how can I infer the existence of Atma in deep sleep when the jiva doesn't remember it? And I think that's kind of the...
I am saying you can infer it. I'm saying, and I think what Radha is saying is that it's more than an inference.
Yeah,
right?
But it's a memory.
Yeah, that's the dispute.
See,
but that's what I'm...
Let me ask you about this. This might help, I don't know. What about you have a meditative experience where there's an experience of non-duality, no subject-object? There is no world experience at all. There's no knower. There's no knower known. The mind is totally resolved in nirvikalpa samadhi, where the only thing that is there is non-dual presence of my being without any subject-object differentiation. We even say in nirvikalpa samadhi, meditative state, where there is no duality apprehended at that time, there is still a vritti there. It's called an eti sukshma vritti, a very subtle vritti, because the vritti is not, that has no content other than its very being, which is the self. But when you come back from that, at that time in nirvikalpa samadhi, you're not saying, oh, I'm in nirvikalpa samadhi, this is the greatest thing in the world, this I've spent my whole life working for this.
By definition, you can't. If you can say, I'm in the state, you're out of the state.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But when the mind bounces back, which it always does from any type of state, then it will describe thoroughly what that was, even though there's no knowership at that time. There's nothing, you know, there's no subject-object relationship. There's no time either. In nirvikalpa samadhi, there is no ticking of the clock, because it's non-dual. The only difference really between nirvikalpa samadhi and deep sleep is, instead of having an awake ati sukshma, very subtle vritti, there's an ati sukshma vritti which is into the causal state of avyakta, ajnanam. But they're similar in that in both states of experience, there's no subject-object.
So there's a vritti. When you're in deep sleep, there's still a vritti there.
Yeah, and there is in deep sleep also. Yeah, it's in the vritti is in the causal condition.
Mm.
You know, and so... But see, say you come back from nirvikalpa and then you describe all about, that's not an inference. Right? You're not saying, oh, I'm inferring that experience. You're not inferring that experience. That was your experience. Deep sleep is your experience also. But in both conditions, there's no commentator when that condition is taking place because there's a resolution of duality.
I don't think I've experienced that.
Rada, what about before your parents met? Can you? Is it pretty big? I'm not being facetious, really. I'm actually curious.
Well, let me tell you that what they say about that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be the. I don't know a lot about this, but I'll just say a few things that Swamiji said about that. When the jiva is transmigrating, so mm-hmm. the jiva means, you know, the subtle body that right. takes on this body, you know, birth after birth after birth. In between bodies, that it's taking in a subtle form depending upon whatever sphere it's in. What they say is that between physical bodies on this bhūloka, you have a much bigger memory. When you're released from this body, so you see, apparently, I don't have any means. This is just.
It's like waking up. A memory of the various states that occurred.
Yeah.
But what I mean, though, is more specific, is more just directed towards the sense of being that you exist.
Oh, that is continuous.
It's the same, right?
It's the same.
As in the deep sleeps, right?
No.
In a sense, right?
When the subtle body is awake, just like in the dream state, mm-hmm. you know, you have subject-object relationship. When the subtle body, but the self is always the same.
Right.
But when this body transmigrates, say, leaves this body, mm-hmm. that pratyabhijna remains.
That's still the same, right?
Still exactly the same. And as you travel, still exactly the same.
So the same logic that you're using for the existence of the Atma in the deep sleep state, one could use for the existence of the Atma before you were conceived.
Yeah, but you have to remember that for you to have that pratyabhijna,
mm-hmm.
like you're going to have a pratyabhijna for memories that you are having. Like for instance.
I mean only if you're a Jew, as a jiva?
Yeah. Yeah, because that's mm-hmm. what the mind is having. It's okay. relating, okay, I was here for this experience, and I was here for this experience, and I was here for this experience, and for this experience.
So you only have a pratyabhijna if you have a subtle body?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
the sense of
me of is Brahman not a pratyabhijna.
Isn't dependent upon of Atma as Brahman is not dependent on
no
pratyabhijna
not at all. That's only that pratyabhijna is only the sense of continuity that you have between differing experiences. Like if you go, oh, yesterday I did this, and then I did this, and then I did that. That recognition that I, the one who am here, is the one that was there, is the one that is there. Another, the one who is happy now is the one who was sad an hour ago, who is the one that was anxious, is the one that was did this, and what, you know, that's the pratyabhijna.
So it's still a subtle form of dualistic consciousness in a way, right?
It is, and well,
very subtle though.
I would say, well, it's dualistic in that it's happening within duality.
Right.
But there's a recognition of one person. Of one person having many experiences.
Okay.
Now the thing is, the personhood becomes more and more differentiated and lands in the end at the Atma. Really, the only person being is the Atma. And everything else is an experience that's coming and going. Right? But there's a pratyabhijna from this terms of the mind that's recognizing, ah, that was my dream, you know, last night. I had the deep sleep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But from the standpoint of the self, no pratyabhijna or anything is necessary. The self is self-evident as consciousness. So if you get rid of the whole universe, conscious being is still there. You know? But it's not there as a knower. But the thing is that your being, the conscious being that you are right now at this moment, is not a knower. That you can differentiate. You can recognize that your being, the me, the conscious being that I am, simply is. I'm not doing anything. And that simplicity of my own being can be differentiated from my perceptions and my thoughts and, you know, my knowership, enjoyership. All of these things are dependent on the upadhis. But me, I'm not, even though it is because of me, everything is known. But I'm not performing an act of knowing. That's what people have to differentiate. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Michael?
I don't quite get that everything is known, but there's no act of knowing.
Yeah. Well, like, what about one illustration they use is the sun is luminous. That's its nature. It's not doing anything except being its nature. It's not illumining anything, performing an action. But because it is what it is, everything that is in its purview is illumined. But it's not doing anything.
It's shining.
It's shining, but that is its swarupa. That's its nature. It's not saying, let me illumine this, let me illumine that. Whatever is in its purview is illumined, you know, because it's near the sun. So for you, everything, every vritti is known, not because consciousness is performing an act of knowing it, but because it's in the purview of consciousness. The thought has arisen, and therefore it is known. But consciousness isn't the one that's saying, let me know this thought. Let me, that's all within duality. That's all the mind talking. But even the mind that say, no, let me look at that, let me look at this, all of those thoughts are illumined also. But consciousness is not performing an act. That's why if you do japa, you know, the japa meditation, it's very good meditation for being able to differentiate just the silent, non-doing presence of yourself in the midst as all these vrittis are rising. You can get your mind, you can ask yourself, am I the conscious me? Am I doing anything here? You say, no, I'm not doing anything at all. But everything is known, but I'm not doing anything. So you can recognize that right now, that all of this is known, all this activity is going on, but you are not doing anything.
That was part of the meditation.
Yeah.
And this noticing, it seems like there's a different quality of noticing the changes in the vrittis and noticing the presence of consciousness.
Yeah. The changeless presence. The presence that never goes away.
Yeah. But it's a different kind of noticing. Because I can notice...
It is a different kind of noticing because it's self-evident. You don't have to do anything. If you got rid of the whole universe, this self-evident me would be there. You know, it's not... You don't have to bring in the mind to know it. It's you are the bottom line, the self-evident presence, you know, that never changes and is the center of all experience, the center and the circumference also of all experience, and nothing's away from it.
So you can notice that while the changes are going on.
Yeah, because one is self-evident and the other is illumined. So self-evident consciousness is never not there. Right? It just has to be differentiated from all of the changing, all of the changing known things.
And it's just as vivid as the changing things.
Yeah, in fact, it's even more so. It's just you're not used to differentiating it.
Pardon me?
You're not used to making that differentiation,
yeah.
That viveka.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's even more vivid than the changing things.
Yeah, so isn't that amazing?
It is, isn't it?
It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's
so you're saying that the Atma is not the knower, it's consciousness with no object. And calling it a knower implies an object, yes?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I guess I'm getting...
It requires a mind.
The verse in the Gita, the Kshetranya...
Kshetranya.
Yeah, the 13-2...
Yeah.
In the practice...
Where you're differentiating the knower the field
that's my great
from
practice.
The knower of the field.
In order to reveal the subject, but it's an exercise that then we move beyond and take the subject away from any object of perception. So
that's exactly
the
right.
Practice of Chaitanyoham and that understanding is still revealing Atma.
It still is, but at the end you realize that the Atma is not performing an act of knowing.
But the teaching of that birth, the knower in that context, is trying to point us to Atma.
That is, absolutely. And
I'm just making sure I wasn't understanding.
No, that's right. And in the Drik Drusha, seer seen, you know, Drik Drusha Viveka, the discrimination between seer and seen, that teaching methodology, that also starts with knower known, like the sense organs are aware of the body and the mind is aware of the sense organs. And then consciousness illumines the mind. But there, you still have the knowership until you have to go one more step and then remove all these known things that are objectified. Then you ask, is consciousness knowing anything, per se, from its own standpoint? What is it doing? It doesn't have a mind, that's been objectified. It doesn't have sense organs, that's been objectified. So consciousness itself is the consciousness because of which all these things are known, but consciousness itself is not performing an act of knowing. And so that's why when the mind goes into like a deep sleep state, into unmanifest condition, there's no subject-object relationship because the instruments that are dependent, that knowership is dependent on, are resolved. And so then there's just your being plus what we call avyakta, the unmanifest condition of the mind, which is just a, really a pure state of ajnanam, you know. That's why that prajnana gana in that this verse is it's just a mass of consciousness without knowing itself, without any self-knowledge. There's just the mind is in a state of ajnanam, you know. Whereas that for Ishvara would be a state of nirvikalpa samadhi similar. Because there's no is no ajnanam. That's I'm sorry. That's a lot more words. I'm too tired. I'm sorry for everybody. You know, I'm kind of dull tonight.
No, that it wasn't
best,
dull at all.
I feel like I don't have all of my faculties to
do the best job.
I think
that contemplation to start with was very revealing.